And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live here in Pete and Terry's Tavern. This is going to be our new home on Predator Game Days. Tell you what, it's cool being able to really take in this place when you see some of the stuff on the walls that, you know, when you're in here after a game or during a game or before a game, when it's packed and it's loud and you don't really get to take in this tavern. But today, right now, at least for now, we can take it all in.
What I would like to see happen at some point is Pete Weber to come in here, because I guarantee you every picture that's hanging on the wall, he can tell you the story behind it.
Because there's some. I would say that's probably a fair assumption, a safe assumption.
They got an old Terry Crisp Islanders jersey. That's pretty cool. So, yeah, this is neat that they've turned this into Pete and Terry's Tavern.
So this is where we're going to be today and for home games this season. And, of course, tonight is the final home tilt for the preseason. It'll be the Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes this evening. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6. And, of course, everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And then they'll wrap things up Friday evening in Raleigh against those same Hurricanes, who, by the way, as we mentioned yesterday when we were live at Centennial Sportsplex, the Hurricanes were involved in a trade with the Blues.
Yeah, Justin Falk.
So they'll be minus Justin Falk.
He is now in the Central Division.
Yeah.
So, and the Blues signed him to an extension.
New deal, yeah.
As soon as they got him. So,
and he
yeah.
got paid.
He got paid. I've always liked his game.
Yep.
So, pretty interesting that
they
make that
move. Carolina Hurricanes, the Florida Marlins, I know they didn't win it, but they made the deep run. Are they the Tampa Bay Rays, the Oakland A's? Is this how they're going to conduct business? I mean, all they've done is shed in the offseason, right? They make this magical run, and all they've done, rather than build on the magical run, here it was all about building and going for it and building and going for it. And it seems like it's just the opposite in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's shed.
I mean, they still have.
This is how we have to do things.
I mean, they added Dzingel. You know, they have him. They have Sebastian Aho that they matched the offer sheet. So they still have him. You know, Holla's there. And they have talent. Jordan Staal is still around. They just, you know, they've lost some. Lost some from last year's team. We'll see what they can do with that, if they can, you know, build upon that success. But you're right. Now, they get Joel Edmondson in the swap for Justin Falk. So the big thing with them is going to be goaltending, because right now you have James Reimer, Peter Mrazek, Anton Forsberg that are their goaltenders. And we know that the goaltending took them a lot further than anybody expected them to last year.
Yep.
But can they? And there's been changes. McElhaney's gone. So
is that right? Who we just saw here?
Yeah.
Is that sustainable over 82 games?
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I
can
would
you
assume
make
you
that
go.
Work?
You go Reimer and Mrazek. That's probably going to be the top two.
You feel comfortable with that for 82 games?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really.
Unless you have like the best defense in the league.
Yeah. I mean it. And
I don't believe that's the case.
No. Dougie Hamilton, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Joel Edmondson. yeah, I don't know. But look, they did it last
year. I know,
year.
They did.
They did it last year, so who knows.
Props to them.
Keeping Aho was big for that fan base, for that market, for them to show. It was almost like when the Predators matched the Shea Weber offer sheet, like, hey, we're for real. We're going to keep our best player, so now you got to build around him.
Yeah.
So.
I have good news. Well, I don't have good news. I have potentially slash maybe slash possibly question mark good news for both of us.
Okay. And you've gone from one end of the spectrum to the unknown. It's kind of where you've gone here.
And I'll tell you where I'm going with this.
Okay.
And now you'll see why it's for both of us.
All right.
The Los Angeles Chargers, they're fine running back Melvin Gordon. Said he could be coming back to camp or reporting very, very soon.
Why?
According to Adam Schefter.
Why wait? Why is he
what is he? Wait, as we've said all along, what are you doing?
It's like, hey, listen.
What are you doing?
I got, I'm going to come back to the facility, but listen, I got a vacation that I got booked coming up next week. I got a doctor's appointment that I got to go to and the dentist. And so once I get all that knocked out, I'll be back. I mean, what is this?
Either you are all in and out, like it looked like Ezekiel Elliott was prepared to do, like Le'Veon Bell did. Either you're that way or you're like, because he's like dipping his toe and, you know, both ends of the pool. Yeah. It's like, ah, you know, I'm mad, but, I, you know, I might report. And it's like, what are you doing, man? What? By the way, it's not working other than, you know, I guess the Chargers haven't gotten off.
He has no leverage.
He doesn't. He really does. Other than, like I said, the Chargers are 1-2. So maybe that's his best, you need me.
But here's my whole thing. It like at this point, they've basically said, hey, we're not going to worry about a contract extension until the offseason. You do you. I think, you know, he's looked for a trade. He hadn't been traded yet. At this point, you know, just go and earn your money. Go earn what you can earn and, you know, then get rewarded for a contract. But sitting out doing nothing and then saying I might be there in a few weeks, what is that going to do for anybody? That's not going to help anyone. So
he did this whole, you know, they did this whole, hey, you can go seek a trade. Remember?
Yeah.
Told him and his people, go pursue a trade. Where's all that been? You heard it? Yeah, you heard anything?
No, because I'm sure the price is too steep. Listen, Melvin Gordon, if you're listening right now, you lost. You gambled and you lost. Just go back.
How about go back and just light it up the rest of the way and get paid?
And you know what could happen? You could go and light it up for a couple weeks and all of a sudden a trade offer come in. And then you get traded. Or the Chargers go, you know what? Here you go. Let's just go ahead and get this done. You're back now. You never know, but you can't do anything until you show up.
He is seeking $13 to $14 million a year. He wants to be in the same category as Gurley, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, and I just got bad news for him. He's a fantastic running back. He may be a tier one running back, but he's below all those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to make $13 million a year too, but it's not gonna happen. Yeah.
But he's making this year like 5.6 or
See, I'd love to make that, too.
But double that, okay, so you give him 10 or 11. I mean, there's no shame in that, man. That's fine.
I don't get this obsession with being the highest paid at a position because
it all goes away very soon.
Right. And at the end of the day, $10 million and $8 million really isn't that far off. You're rich.
Well,
you're comfortable.
Well, it's $2 million.
Well, I understand.
Over so many years.
I understand. But I think you're going to be okay. That's my point. Like, you're going to be okay.
Well, here is the point. What is he making right now?
He said five something?
No, he's not making
nothing.
He's making nothing right now.
At this moment, nothing.
The point is he's making nothing right now. So $0 to fill in the blank, whatever the number is the right decision. It's
right.
B. Fill in the blank, whatever the number is, because $0 is a horrible option.
Yeah, he's losing money.
So what are you doing? You're not winning doing this. Look, nobody's going to give – whoever's representing you, and I don't know who it is, you're getting bad advice. You're not a $13, $14 million a year running back. But it doesn't mean that you can't make 10, possibly 11, but you're not $13, $14 million a year. You're just not. You're not the same as Ezekiel Elliott. You're not the same as – although right now, you know, Todd Gurley and David Johnson, and Le'Veon Bell, how do those deals look?
They don't look very good.
Do you think the Jets and the Cardinals and the Rams would do the same if they had a do-over?
No.
I don't either.
I
don't think it's even close. I mean, has David Johnson been the same?
No, that's the problem with running backs, though. You give a running back a big deal like that, and they fall off. You know that's going to happen. That's why guys like Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon – and Ezekiel Elliott want to get paid as quickly as they possibly can because they know and they're being advised, like, your body's going to break down. The running back position has the shortest career span of any position, I would say. And so they want to get paid. So I get that. I understand that point. But, you know, for these teams that are paying $12, $13 million for a running back, I mean, it's going to be a bad investment on their part because they're not going to get the full potential. They're just not. I mean, Todd Gurley is showing that he's been in the league how long? For what, 5 years? Is this year five for him?
Yeah, that sounds right. Year five?
Four, five.
2015.
He was in the 2015 draft. So this is year four?
Yeah.
Year five, yeah.
So, I mean, look, that's about right that his body starts to break down. That in, you know, because he, the look at the type of running back he has been in his career and the hits that he's taken, and then you go last year, he has the injury. I mean, nobody should be surprised that he's not bouncing back from that. That's just how the running back position goes.
And, oh, by the way, he capitalized on the new deal. This is year five. In year four, by having 21 total touchdowns, 21 rushing for 1,250 yards and receiving almost 600 yards. Okay, yeah. So that's almost 2,000 yards between rushing and receiving and 21 total touchdowns. He capitalized on a massive year. Melvin Gordon hasn't had. I mean, he's had really good years, but he's never had a year like that. And so credit Todd Gurley for doing that. He cashed in on a big monster year, which has happened. Joe Flacco did the same thing after the Ravens won the Super Bowl.
Right.
He cashed in on a deal. He left the Baltimore no choice but to give him the deal he wanted, even though they probably all they knew behind the scenes he's not worth this, but he just won us the Super Bowl. We got to give him the money. And so Todd Gurley did what every player's trying to do, cash in. So, Melvin Gordon, if you want to cash in, then get back on the field and go have a monster year for the Chargers, a monster year, and cash in. And if you don't get it in L.A., somebody else will give it to you.
Yep. You just got to be there. And then get the guaranteed money because that's what they're all about. Because we all know that, you know, you could sign a guy to a five-year deal making $13 million a year. He's not going to live out that contract. That just it doesn't happen in the NFL. So get your money and go back to camp and join your team. Get out there and actually make something instead of 0.0.
We come back, we'll talk to the play-by-play man of Northern Illinois. Of course, they're playing Vanderbilt this Saturday. We'll do that next. We'll learn a little bit more about Vanderbilt's opponent next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, Pete and Terry's Tavern here, backside of Bridgestone Arena. Tonight's the Predators and Carolina Hurricanes' final home game in the preseason. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Bill Baker is the voice of Northern Illinois, the Huskies, in his 40th season. So I would say if we are ever going to find out or learn anything about Vanderbilt's opponent, we had Derek Mason, their head coach, on yesterday on the show. Bill is the guy. Bill, good morning. How you doing?
Gentlemen, Darren, how are you? Good to be with you. Thanks for the invite.
40 seasons of Husky football. That's impressive.
Yeah, seen quite a bit of it when you come down to it. Obviously, got to see all three games that the Huskies played against Vanderbilt, including the infamous 25-point implosion, I guess you might say. I think that was the second game we played down in Nashville and blew that 25-point fourth-quarter lead. So you guys have a 3-0 advantage, but away we go. It's been 20 years. It's been a long time since these two programs have gotten together.
It has been a long time. So with that being said, what do you make of this Northern Illinois team that's had a lot of success over the years? We've grown accustomed to seeing them in bowl games year in and year out, and they're 1-2. Obviously, they had two tough opponents their last two games at Utah and at Nebraska. What have you learned about this Huskies team early on this season?
Well, I do know this, Thomas Hammack told us right when he got the job back in January. He had looked at tape, and he knew the roster. He knew he was coming back. He knew who was coming in. He said to be patient. It could be a work in progress, and that's exactly what it's turned out to be. But not so much scheme-wise, not so much with Thomas Hammack and his staff trying to incorporate things and put things together, but more so, guys, from an injury standpoint. I mean, we have just we've been decimated. You just start with the linebacking spot. The Huskies were supposed to have had probably the best trio of linebackers in all of the group of five coming into this particular season. But one guy never started the season. He got hurt in camp, and he's gone for the year. The second guy got hurt out at Utah. He is gone for the year. So two-thirds of that, you know, has now evaporated. you've got one of your defensive linemen, a redshirt senior, who was supposed to anchor that line, and he went out in the game against Utah and has not come back as yet. And you lost a couple of backup defensive backs, both of whom were going to play extensively. In fact, one started the opening game, and they're both out for the year. So it's been plug and play with guys. He's been trying to find combinations that work. He's been trying to develop the chemistry, things that you normally do in the spring that you get out of the way in fall camp. And all of a sudden, three games into this 2019 season, and, you know, he's still looking for some answers.
You mentioned Thomas Hammack in his first year with the Huskies. What have you seen out of him? What is the guy? Tell us a little bit about him. Obviously, they've had guys come through there. You know, we remember Jerry Kill there, and guys that have gone on and done really well, Dave Dorn. But when you see him in three games in, what does he bring to the table, in your opinion, Bill?
I tell you, he brings a completely different style of coaching. This is a guy that, is as down to earth as you're ever going to find. There's an old saying that, you want to be a coach, you don't necessarily want to be a friend, to players. But, with him, I don't think that holds up. I think these guys respect him as both a coach and a friend. He is organized. He's one of these guys to the nth degree. And he knows exactly, what he wants to do and then where he wants to go and how he's going to get there. And he just incorporates this thing down. His meetings are timed to the moment, practices. When he says 3:30, the whistle blows at 3:30. He's not afraid to challenge individuals. He came in and he said, hey, nobody's got a job. a lot of coaches say that. He meant it. Nobody had a job as of the middle part of January, and everybody pretty much had to earn back everything that they got. He brings a wealth of experience from both, the collegiate side of things, spending 5 years as the running backs coach with Baltimore in the NFL certainly gave him, a look at what goes on beyond, college football. And to that end, he's able to coach kids and kind of guide them in whichever direction that they have to go. He's a motivator, and he knows so many people. He put together a staff out of thin air in the span of about 3 or 4 weeks. And they usually say that it takes 2 to 3 years for a staff to really come together and mesh. And I don't know where these guys are going to be in 2 to 3 years, but they've done a pretty darn good job of it, as of right now. So, and Thomas Hammack, he's the point guy on everything for Red Eye football. So, it starts with him. It starts with him. It stops with him. He takes the responsibility. He'll take it on himself. He took the loss at Nebraska, said, this one's on me. It's not on anybody else. And you just kind of go from there.
Chase, just to put Bill Baker's career in perspective, he was calling games at Northern Illinois when Lee Corso was the head coach.
Wow.
Yeah, all nine of them.
I was going to say, it wasn't even a seat. Was it a full season?
No. We had an 11-game season, and he took the job in Orlando 9 games into it. The last couple of games, it was sort of done by committee. It was both road games, as I recall, though. So, matter of fact, true story. The team, I think they beat Central Michigan that last game, and they gave him the game ball that we packed up, and we were in the parking lot, and this was, an hour and a half, 2 hours after the game. It was dark as anything out there, and here's this one lonely guy walking across the parking lot with a football tucked underneath his arm. It's Lee Corso, and he said, Coach, where are you going? He says, I'm going back to my hotel room. I guess he wasn't living in a house any longer, and so we took him over there, and we just said, hey, Coach, off the record, you're coming, you're going, we see you next week at Ohio. And he was in the back seat. He just stuck his hand over the seat and said, it's been a pleasure, guys. Thanks for everything. I mean, end of the night, the guy just disappears up to the step. We turn around, he left the football on the back of the car.
Bill Baker is with us. He's the voice of Northern Illinois. They take on Vanderbilt coming up this weekend on West End. And Bill, as we tell stories and talk about you being the play-by-play man for 40 years, I'm always fascinated by people in this profession that are able to stay in one spot for that long. What was it that kept you there, that was able to keep this career going for you at Northern Illinois?
NIU, it's kind of a place you can fall in love with, but I'm a homebody too. I mean, I was born in Chicago, and I live about 30 miles west of Chicago. The Cavs about 30 miles from here. I was in radio in the Chicagoland area, and I didn't see where I was better or anything. And then, you raise a family, you've got two daughters, and they don't want to go anywhere. They don't want the life of a nomad broadcaster at what they used to say on WKRP, Town and Sound, up and down the dial. But they had nothing in common with that. And we stayed. And it was a good place. And the people that came in through my career in athletic administration were some reason we bonded with every single one of them. And then you just get to the point. You know, I always said, guys, when this gets to be a job, then I'm going to walk away from it. And, you know, sometimes travel's a little hectic. Sometimes you get a few things that just kind of gum up the works. But for the most part, still not a job. And, good Lord willing, and as long as the administration goes along with it, I hope to be there a few more years.
Very, very cool. So, again, back to the game. Ross Bowers is your quarterback. And I know that through the first three games, it's been a little bit of a struggle because of the opponents that you played, Nebraska. That's a tough place to play. But what have you seen out of Ross Bowers so far?
You know, he's a gunner. He can throw the ball, and he's completely different. And this is what Husky fans have to get used to, and this is what the offensive line has to get used to. This guy's a drop-back, pro-style pocket passer. And this is what, you know, Thomas Hammock was looking to bring in. He won a competition fair and square, but, you know, heretofore for the last 12 years or so, and including a guy like Jordan Lynch, who was a Heisman finalist, at IU, their quarterbacks were, you know, typical dual-threat quarterbacks. In other words, they're going to run the football 15 or 20 times in the ballgame. And, you see Bowers run it three or four. That's a ton. So it's a completely different style of play. He can gun the ball with the best of them downfield. I think he surprised a few of the wide receivers with his ability to throw the ball, especially on the move. He is a pocket passer, but he's got enough of a leg underneath him to, you know, to get him out of a little bit of trouble if they have to. And he's great field awareness. We see that. This guy was a Pac-12 quarterback for a year. I mean, he played at Cal for a year. So that's the level you're talking about right here. So he's a guy that, and again, you know, we talk about chemistry and we talk about filling holes. I mean, the offensive line, we've been, you know, knock on wood, we haven't had a lot of problems with that. But you're still trying to find the right people in the right spot, get the chemistry going and get that offensive line. Once they settle down, once you get the running game going, the sky's going to be the limit, I think, for Ross Bowers.
And that leads me into my next question. With the running game that, you know, I know it hasn't been the dominant part of the offense, but is that something that Vanderbilt's going to have to watch out for on Saturday?
Well, we think that's one of the keys. And you know, every coach I've worked with over the last 4 years have said, you know, job number one in the football game is to run the ball, and job number two is to stop the run. And the Huskies have been your typical running type of a program. Is that changing? I think it might be a little bit under Thomas Hammock. We'll see. If three games is not a good barometer, and we haven't played a conference game as yet. So that's yet to be determined. But, yeah, the running game has struggled this year, and primarily, I mean, Utah, when we played them, I think they were number six in the country against the run. We played Nebraska, they were number 20 in the country against the run. We played Illinois State, and that's an FCS program, and at their level of FCS, they were number 11 against the run when we played them. So they we've had three pretty good opponents adept at stopping the ground game. It's that sort of front, really. I mean, like I said, with the offensive line, you got to get those seams. We've got a guy that ran for better than 1,000 yards last year in Trey Harbison. We just haven't been able to get him on track. His backup, Jordan Nettles, I think maybe a step quicker. We used him extensively at Nebraska, just trying to get to the edge a little bit, maybe more on slants, trying to use his feet. He can carry the football, but it has to start up front. And that's the crux to the whole thing. Now, that's one of the keys, the NIU offensive line against the Vanderbilt defenders, and we'll see what happens. One thing I know, when I look at your numbers, you're going to have to get off against you guys, you know, pretty early in this game. You guys give up a ton of points in the opening quarter, and that is something NIU is going to have to try to take advantage of. They're going to stay with you guys, I think, this weekend.
Bill, really appreciate the visit. Enjoy your time here. I know it's going to be a 11 o'clock kickoff over on West End. And thanks for telling us a little bit more about Vanderbilt's opponent. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. Indeed. Always glad to talk with you guys. And the one thing we do know about Vanderbilt, we know your quarterback, Riley Neal. You saw him at Ball State. He threw for 260 yards. He threw 56 times against us last year. I thought I'd see the last of this guy, but I guess not. So I think it's going to be a tense ball game. Looking forward to it.
And the opponent after Vanderbilt is indeed Ball State, like you said, minus
yes,
Riley Neal.
That's right. Conference opener.
Bill, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Welcome, guys. Take care.
All right, that is Bill Baker. That is the voice of Northern Illinois, the Huskies, in his 40th season as they come to town. Been 20 years since Vanderbilt and Northern Illinois has gotten together. 11 o'clock kickoff over on West End. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
All right, so we're back here.
Wrong headset. I've been talking to myself. Well, I've been talking to the fine folk, not folks, because there's one person here in Pete and Terry's Tavern. But, yeah, I was talking to myself. Wrong headset. That's a blunder on me. Joe Rexroad from The Athletic in about 15 minutes. So I'll just repeat everything that I just said here live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. They've got $12.50 burger and brews all day. Happy hour 3 to 6, $5 domestic drafts, $6 craft drafts, and $7 specialty cocktail today. Ooh. At Pete and Terry's Tavern. You are not allowed to partake in any of that. You're working.
I know. No, I'm good. I'm good until 3 o'clock and then vacation begins. Then I
Oh, that's right. That is a good point. I forgot. You're right.
Do you like when you fly, do you
No.
Never do that?
Nope. I don't know. I mean, I just never have.
I will have a cocktail before the flight. It's not that I get nervous.
I know a lot of people, is it just to calm the nerves?
No, I don't get nervous. I like flying. I'm one of those people that actually enjoy flying, and I'll sleep. But it just, I think it will settle my stomach a little bit to just kind of have one, and then
skies. I've been doing a lot of flying in the last, like, 4 months. And even the flight up to Cleveland back at the beginning of the month, I mean, there was a group of guys that were going up, I'm assuming, for the game. And, they were drinking heavily the whole flight. I mean, it's like an hour and five-minute flight. And I'm like, okay. I don't know. I mean, I think they were just having fun. But, no, I don't ever – I love to fly because I don't like to be in the car a long time. I don't love to fly. I love to fly, but I don't love to fly, if you know what I mean.
Right. I feel you.
I don't need that to kind of get me through it. I just want to get through
it. It's not that I need it. I just, you know, I'm like, at this point, I'll be like, all right, vacation begins. Ricky's meeting me there. Have one or two, and then head on south.
People that love long road trips and cars, God bless you.
I used to.
Just not for me.
But now that I'm older, I don't. I'd rather fly. I'd
just rather get there. Get to point A to point B as fast as I can. That's the way I look at it. Jalen Ramsey. Doug Marrone is currently the head coach of the Jags. Who knows how long he will be the head coach of the Jags. But when asked about Jalen Ramsey, who's dealing with a back issue, I thought he was sick.
Yes.
Monday it was sick.
I thought he had the flu.
Now he's got a back injury that has flared up, back issue. And Doug Marrone said he really doesn't know when the back flared back up.
Yeah.
Something
I see what
like
you did
that.
There.
Yeah. It's weird how that how he wants a trade and wants out of there, and now he's sick and got a back issue. So he is clearly, to me, this is the way I look at it, he is doing what we've been talking about. He is absolutely going to force their hand. He is, He is saying, "You are going to trade me. Like I don't have you
He's
don't
like,
have a
I
choice.
Don't want to be here.
You're not going to keep paying me $277,000 a week to sit here and do nothing."
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're going to be forced to. But the problem is with his methods and how he's going about this. Because you and I were on the same page of, hey, if I'm John Robinson, pick up the phone, see what the price is going to be. But if this is the method in which he's taken to get a trade, if I'm a GM of another team, I'm looking at this going like, I don't know if I really want to deal with this.
Well, what he's doing is he's not helping. Now, I get it, because if he gets hurt, then everything's done. And so he's SOL because he's got to be stuck there. He wants out, so I get that part. But it would make things easier if he'd go out there and ball and, you know, maybe that makes him more attractive piece. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know how much that changes. You either know Jalen Ramsey's a spectacular talent or you don't. I don't know if playing now changes anything. Either you have an opinion one way or the other, yeah. right now today, whether he plays on Sunday or not.
I'll use this example. And, look, it all worked out. You know, it worked out for Ezekiel Elliott. But I know for me, watching the Cowboys, Dak Prescott wants a new contract. Ezekiel Elliott wanted a new contract. Dak Prescott was there. He was working through training camp. And he doesn't have it yet, but he's going to get it. Ezekiel Elliott went elsewhere. Now, that, you know, that happens. For Jalen Ramsey, he's there. He's a part of the team. Act like you're a part of the team until you get traded. You've made it known you want to get out of there. Like, you want to move on. You don't want to be with the Jags anymore. Everybody knows that. But just go to work. Keep your head down. Don't say anything. You've said your piece. But saying you're sick and then having injuries and all this, it's a bad look, and it's probably going to hurt him. It's probably going to come back to bite him, that they're not going to be able to move him, at least for the price that they want. And
I don't think they're going to get what they want. No. I don't think. They're going to have to come down.
Yeah. I definitely think they will.
But now he is forced. Look, if the Cowboys didn't want Ezekiel Elliott, he would be on a different team right now.
Yeah.
Or he would just be sitting there doing nothing.
He'd be in Cabo.
Yeah, he just would be in Cabo working out. But they wanted him back. I mean, they know they have a window now to win. They know their team is good, and they wanted him. And, oh, by the way, when he's on the field, he's arguably the best running back in the league. So, but if they didn't feel that way, or they thought he was a massive headache and he wasn't worth it, then he would either be sitting idle or he would be on another team. Jalen Ramsey, I mean, Jacksonville, I don't know what their plan is. I have no clue.
I don't think they know what their plan is.
They obviously have not come off as the most well-oiled machine in the National Football League.
No.
What is the future of their head coach? What is the future of their front office? What is their future at anything? They try. It's not like they're not trying. But, they go out and they get Nick Foles, and, you know, that happened. But, you know, you've got Gardner Minshew now, and so I don't know what their future is. I know they'd like to keep Jalen Ramsey, but it's very clear he's saying, I don't want to be here, so get me out of here. And when you have a player that says, I don't want to be here, no matter what you feel, don't you have to move on?
Yeah, because you're not going to change it.
You're not going to change it.
If I'm a front office guy for them, if a guy says, hey, I don't want to be here, I don't want him there. Because it's just going to – he's going to have a bad attitude. It's going to go throughout the locker room, and then other guys are going to get a bad attitude. They call that a cancer. It spreads. That's what you don't want. And if Jalen Ramsey really doesn't want to be there because he doesn't like the situation that he's in, then Jacksonville needs to move on. The thing that's interesting to me, and I wonder about, because pretty much since Shad Khan has bought this team, not that they were in a great situation anyway, but they've been to the AFC title game, but they've struggled. If you're Shad Khan, do you sit there and just go, what am I doing? I mean, I guess he's making money.
But I think he's a guy who clearly loves to own sports entities because he's dabbling in all kinds of stuff, right? I mean,
his son owns a wrestling company.
He's a billionaire many, many times over.
Yep.
They've got the whole soccer. They've got football, wrestling. I mean, they want to be in the sports industry. They got gobs of money. Does that make him a good owner?
Yeah.
No. I mean, just because you have gobs of money.
I would say he's not a very good owner.
I would not put him in the good owner category because, like I said, they have not come off as a well-oiled machine. They just haven't. They've been more of a hot mess than good. Yeah, they had their flash. It was really more of a flash in the pan 2 years ago. And their run to the AFC title game, but a whole lot of losing and tarps and disinterest in between.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, especially now that he's making it very clear that you're going to get rid of me, I think they're going to have to get rid of him. I mean, they have to be. I would think they're actively seeking a trade partner.
They're going to blow that thing up. I just think that's where it's going. Even though they're coming off a win, but are you as shocked as I am about Tom Coughlin that he hasn't come in there and been the CEO of this thing? I thought he'd go in there and fix things.
Yeah.
And it worked they went to an AFC title game with Blake Bortles as the quarterback because they had a really, really good defense. But outside of that, now you have a ton of me players that have split the locker room, and It just hadn't worked.
Nope. We'll come back. Joe Rexroad to close out the first hour from The Athletic here live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. We'll do that next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Darren, Donick, and Chase rolling right along here from Bridgestone Arena, Pete and Terry's Tavern, as the Preds close out the home slate of the preseason tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. Darren McFarland has stepped downstairs for morning skate duties. Willie Donick also doing that. So it's just me for a little bit. We say hello to The Athletic's Joe Rexroad. Joe, what's up, my man?
Chase, good to hear from you. A little green-eyed lady coming in, by the way. I don't know if that's Max or who, but two thumbs up from me on that.
Yeah,
one.
Max on the ones and twos back there. He does a good job. He's got a wide selection of music bringing us back.
Very nice.
So I wanted to hit a lot of different things with you because I haven't got a chance to really talk to you in a while, and there's a lot going on in this state from a sports standpoint. And I want to start in Knoxville with the Volunteers, the drubbing that they took from Florida. And we've had a lot of discussion on the show about the state of that football program with Jeremy Pruitt, with Philip Fulmer as the athletic director. And I'll just go ahead and tell you my conspiracy theory. I think Philip Fulmer is the head coach by the end of the season. I just don't see this working. I kind of feel like that, you know, he would never say no to that he almost wants that to happen. He wanted to give Pruitt a shot, but it just hasn't worked to this point because it feels like that locker room is starting to quit on him if they haven't already.
Man, see, this is where I need to, like, resist the urge, because I've had the urge a couple times to be like, if Philip Fulmer coaches this team, I will, you know, like, paint something on my face or whatever. Like, every time I say something like that, I always end up being wrong. Right now, I don't at all think that's going to happen. And I understand the conspiracy theory. I don't think Philip Fulmer, you know, here's my question back to you, Chase. Do you think that would be a move for him to, like, keep the job then and sort of, like, have another shot at, you know, getting the Vols back as coach, or just a short-term move? Because I just can't believe that Philip Fulmer looks at this as, like, he's ready to put 10 good years in, and he knows how big the job is of getting this program back. You know what I mean?
I think, and Darren has pointed this out, I think the thing for him is he sees what Mack Brown is doing at UNC. He sees what some other coaches have done that have been out for a while. Herm Edwards is a prime example at Arizona State, that they've been out for a while, and then they come back, and then all of a sudden, oh, okay, they're recruiting, and they – you know, they're having some success. Now, he's in a different position because he's the athletic director. So, honestly, I could see it being a short-term fix. But at the same time, if that is the case, then it's going to be really hard for him to hire somebody outside because they know that, all right, well, Philip Fulmer is going to be breathing down my neck with every decision that I make. So, I would almost think if he makes that move, you're going to be stuck with him for at least a season or more.
Yeah, and so if he makes that move, he's also saying, hey, I was completely wrong in hiring Jeremy Pruitt. Sorry. And, oh, we got to pay another guy millions to not work here. So, my bad. You know, like, I suppose if he were, I guess maybe him coaching well is the only way to, like, absorb that. But yeah, to your point, like, who the heck would ever want to work for him again if he chops a guy in year two? You know, I think it's already questionable on that front. And, you know, if you're a Fulmer, you can say, look, I came in and it was slim pickings and the whole search had gone haywire without me. And that wasn't me. And I did the best I could under the circumstances. And Jeremy's just not the guy. And my answer to that would be Mike Leach, like, wanted to come to Knoxville. And, you know, that was a proven head coach who has done really good things at places that don't have resources anywhere near what Tennessee has. And instead you opted for a defensive coordinator who's never been a head coach, who's only been an assistant at programs that have more talent than the opponent 11 out of 12 Saturdays. But I just, Chase, can't believe that Fulmer's going to do this. But you know what? If he does, it's just another shame on you moment for me for thinking that anything's out of the realm of possibility in Knoxville.
Yeah, you can't do it at this point.
One more on Tennessee. Do you think Jeremy Pruitt's going to survive? Do you think it's going to work for him?
Well, I don't know about work. I do think he's going to survive this season. And I think he'll, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of negativity going into next year because he's probably going to go about 4-8 or maybe 5-7 this year. And it's going to be a tough job. And it'll be really interesting to see what he can make of this 2020 class, which right now is right a fringe top 25 class, which in the SEC means you're close to the bottom. I do think he'll survive this year. But right now, my guess on him long term would be that he's not going to make it because, look, the evidence we have to go on is each Saturday, and it's been really disappointing to see how they've played. I mean, last week was disappointing, just the mistakes. And, you know, that's a Florida team that's really not a top 10 team, in my opinion, but they made them look like it. And obviously, Georgia State happened, blowing the game against BYU. You can sit there and blame this player or that player if you want, but that's why coaches make so much money, because it's their job to put them in the positions to make plays and to have them organize and communicate at those pressure moments. And so it's all failing right now. I'm not going to sit here and say, no way does he make it, but it would be a heck of a comeback at this point.
Joe Rexroad from The Athletic is here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Now we shift to the Tennessee Titans. It has not been a great start through three games for the Titans as they get ready to take on the Falcons this weekend. They look good against Cleveland. Now, I still was one of those people that was like, all right, the defense got it done and need to see a little bit more out of the offense, but the offense has shown their warts over the last two games. If you had to do an evaluation right now on Mike Vrabel and the coaching job that he has done through three games, how would that go?
Well, I think that certainly the end of the second game was probably one of the biggest miscues, if not the biggest miscue, of his short tenure with the Titans. I will never understand the sort of, you know, wishy-washy attempt to draw the Colts offsides and then stand there and let those seconds tick off under 4 minutes in a game that you're trailing. You cannot make that mistake. And that was crucial. And I put it up there with, I guess, like the Luke Stocker 4th-and-1 dive last year in Houston. And I think overall Vrabel's been good, and some weeks very good, but that was very bad. And then last week at Jacksonville, it's just an all-around bad performance, and you just – I don't know what the adjustments are. At some point, if you're just getting beat that badly on the offensive line, what do you do? At some point, if your quarterback is just missing wide-open receivers 10 yards in front of him, what do you do? So some of that is out of the coach's hands, but you still would have liked to see some kind of adjustment to try to, you know, help the situation. So overall, it hasn't been great. I mean, again, I thought week one was obviously a big win, an impressive win, and I thought Arthur Smith that week had some really great moments. I mean, I think the screenplay to Derrick Henry really won that game. The Browns were climbing back in. That's a great schemed-up moment. And obviously, it's, you know, it's Derrick Henry, but that's what coaches do, put those players in position to make those plays. But since then, looking for more from Arthur Smith for sure. So this is just for everyone. But I do think, you know, you asked about the coaches, Chase. I think for them in particular, this is a monster week in Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other part of it is the offense, and Marcus Mariota is where that starts. I thought that Delanie Walker's comments on getting Taylor Lewan back is going to be good, that we love Taylor, but it's not going to fix everything. And I could not agree with that more, because there are bigger issues than just the left tackle being out. Dennis Kelly hasn't done that bad. He's not Taylor Lewan, but it's, you know, that the interior offensive line has been bad. I think Marcus has been inconsistent, which is what we've been saying for the past few years with him. I almost feel like he's playing, and I'm trying to use these words carefully, he's playing a little bit scared in the sense of he doesn't have any time to get rid of the football, so he's forcing plays or overthrowing receivers because he doesn't want to get hit, even though he's getting hit a ton.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, look, I think in the first half of the Jacksonville game in particular, there were several pass plays where he actually had all day to throw and just missed passes. And I agree with you. I think that at times you can see him sort of bracing for the pass rush, even if it's not there yet. And then, rather than having his eyes downfield and going to read two and read three, he is kind of turtling and either taking a sack or he's running around. But, you know, look, It is a very hard job. It's why they get paid that much. But you've got to be able to stand in the pocket, go through your reads with all that chaos going around you, and deliver the football accurately. And so he's, you know, he is, some of these are self-inflicted. As far as the offensive line, I certainly agree that, I mean, Lawan's not going to fix everything. All you have to do is go back to the Baltimore game last year when Lawan played, when they couldn't protect Mariota. But, and Dennis Kelly, I agree, hasn't been bad, but the Titans have geared a lot of things to helping Kelly. And so now when you can say, okay, Taylor's fine out there, he can take a top pass rusher, and then we can adjust our help to other people, maybe that helps a little bit. I mean, it should help to get him back. It is not, and I agree with Delaney Walker, it's not a cure-all. I mean, Roger Saffold can't get beat like that. You know, Jameel Douglas probably shouldn't be playing anymore. And that's probably going to be the case soon. But some of these are just individual guys getting beat, and everyone has to play better.
Yep. Could not agree more. Joe Rexroth of The Athletic. Hey, it's good to talk to you, my friend.
Good to talk to you. I missed you, man. We'll see you at the rink soon, I imagine.
Yes, absolutely, because hockey is here. We'll talk soon.
Okay, buddy. Thanks.
That is Joe Rexroth of The Athletic. Does fine work for them. Check his work out at theathletic.com. We will have much more coming in the 11 o'clock hour. Darren and Willie will rejoin the show here in just a few minutes as you listen to Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.